This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about love. We're going to be talking about love without limits. We're going to be talking about the seven natural laws of love. We're going to be talking to my guest, Deborah Taj Annapol. And Dr. Annapol is a healer, a writer, and a teacher. She's the author of several books. Her latest is The Seven Natural Laws of Love, published in 2005. She's currently at work on a new book about harmonizing feminine and masculine energies. Dr. Annapol's organized and produced several conferences, as well as working with couples and families and individuals who are exploring conscious relating and sexual healing. She leads seminars nationwide and is an inspiring and controversial speaker who has appeared on radio and television programs all across the USA and Canada. Dr. Annapol is the author of Polyamory, The New Love Without Limits, published in 1997. She's a co-founder of Loving More magazine and a producer of the video Pelvic Heart Integration.
Most people, if they're honest with themselves, will find that over time they have an attraction for more than one person. And sometimes the way this is handled is by what's now called serial monogamy. That is, you get rid of your first partner and then get a second one, or a third, or a fourth. And interestingly enough, this type of relationship was originally called serial polygamy. What happens very often is that people communicate their desire or their behavior in a way that does create judgment and blame, because that's what they're expecting and that's what they're anticipating. A lot of our agenda, and I'll say are, because I think it really is extremely rare to find a person who's not driven to some extent by this agenda of receiving love and feeling good because of the excitement, the sexual charge, the egoic gratification, all of these things that we call love, or sometimes infatuation, but they're very different from how I'm defining love, which is really more about what you can give and the willingness to recognize the other as essentially your own self.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Deborah Annapol.
Thank you.
So I just want to kind of dive right in here. I noticed that you consider yourself a controversial speaker. What do you speak about that's so controversial?
Well, many people find the idea of having any kind of relationship other than a monogamous heterosexual couple relationship to be pretty controversial. And in all the years I've been teaching about relationships and tantric sexuality, I find that the whole idea of loving more than one person is extremely threatening and scary to a lot of people. It's gotten less true over the years, but I think it strikes fear in the heart.
Well, certainly we see that, nationwide, and all kinds of suggested constitutional amendments that marriage can only be between one man and one woman. So I'm clear that this is something that's a deep chord in the United States anyway.
Right, right. Interestingly enough, in most of the world, it's acceptable for men to have more than one wife, but usually not vice versa. Mm. So In a sense, you could say that polyamory is about equal rights for women. But even polyamory is really, I'd say, not understood by the majority of people in the way that I intended when I wrote the book and that I discuss in the book that's been out for, well, it's hard to believe, but over 10 years now.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's talk for a moment. This word polyamory gets thrown around a lot, and I think some of my listeners probably have an idea what they think it means, and others have a different idea what they think it means, and I think I know what it means. What do you mean when you use the term polyamory?
Well, the way I defined it in the original book was when you allow love to flow, when you allow love to create the form that your relationship takes, rather than starting out with a picture of how it's supposed to be. And because humans are not naturally a monogamous species, it's extremely rare to find someone who has only one sexual partner, or these days, one spouse for their entire lifetime. Very unusual. And so I think most people, if they're honest with themselves, will find that over time they have an attraction for more than one person. And sometimes the way this is handled is by what's now called serial monogamy. That is, you get rid of your first partner and then get a second one, or a third, or a fourth. And interestingly enough, this type of relationship was originally called serial polygamy, and the name was changed to serial monogamy when it became really the norm for this society. But coming back to your question, what is polyamory? It might look like more than one partner, but it might look like monogamy, not monogamy that's enforced by some external authority, but monogamy that is simply the truth of what you're experiencing. It could also be a single person who's celibate, if that's their truth. Just whatever form your love and your erotic love as well happens to take, that would be polyamory.
You remind me of some of the modern architects. You're saying basically that the form should follow the function, you know, like that you should create what your heart wants to create, not create this form and then see if you can make your heart fit.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're not saying people shouldn't choose one partner, be in love, spend 50 years in love, raise a family together, you know, that there's something wrong with that. You're not saying there's something inherently wrong with that, are you?
Absolutely not. If that's what occurs in your life, then that's wonderful. That's beautiful. It's just extremely rare.
Right. Right. Well, and then I guess the alternative to that is you're also not saying, and just because that might work for some people, doesn't mean it should be legislated for all of us that it's that way or no way.
Exactly. And when I wrote The Seven Natural Laws of Love, what I realized is that when I started talking about polyamory, really what I was trying to do was to redefine love in a way that was more in harmony with natural law rather than man-made law. But at that time, I didn't quite have the guts to say, all right, I'm redefining love now. Instead, I thought I had to give it a special name, and that name was polyamory.
Oh. Okay, so when you talk about the natural laws of love, say more about that. What natural laws? Who made these laws? I mean, where do you, are these laws everywhere? Tell me more.
Okay, the idea of a natural law, and I think the word law might be a little misleading for someone, because we're used to the concept of man-made laws that are used to govern societies and that are usually enforced with punishments. And a natural law has no punishment attached to it. It wasn't made up by anyone. And you don't have to observe it if you don't want to. But if you don't, you just won't get the result that you want. And in most of our lives, we're used to these kinds of natural laws. If you jump off of a cliff, you will fall. Unless you're a bird anyway, you're not going to fly. If you put your hand in a fire, you're going to get burnt, unless you do it very quickly and you know the right part of the flame. Now, in some cases, we don't understand natural laws entirely. For example, we don't understand why when people prepare themselves in a certain way, they're able to walk on hot coals without being burned. And so a natural law, not only is it not created by men and women, but sometimes it's poorly understood. And yet we find that certain things are universal, which means that people from different cultures and different countries and different eras have these things in common. They're not beliefs, they're not norms, they're not legislated.
So I understand gravity is certainly a planet-wide phenomenon. You know, it's definitely doesn't matter where you grew up or where you were born, you're going to experience gravity. Well, tell me a natural law of love that's universal.
Well, one of my favorites, because it makes such an incredible difference for people once they realize this, is what I call the law of source. And the law of source says that the source of love is inside of you. It's not in your partner, it's not in your parent, your child, or even an external divinity. But the love that's already inside of you, in fact, in a way you could say that your nature is love. You are love. And if this, if people love from this place of feeling that the love that they already have is completely abundant and eternal and can never be taken away, then we begin to love in a way that's more unconditional, that's not so fear-based and manipulative. As long as you believe that the source of love is outside, it isn't true, and the results that you get from this kind of love are generally conflict and misery.
So, if the source of love is inside me, what do I need other people for?
To share that love with, to express that love with. In a sense, you really don't need, I won't say you don't need other people because we are social animals, but you don't need a soulmate. You don't need a romantic partner. Mm-hmm. Now, many people find that this enriches their lives and creates a lot of meaning, but it's not a necessity. You can love, and this is the, I think the intent with monks and nuns is that they are married to the divine, and therefore they are free to love everyone, to express mm-hmm. their love throughout society, throughout creation.
Yeah, so you're basically proposing what seems to me to be an antidote to some of the insanity where people feel like they're not complete except through the love of someone else, and then they squeeze that person dry trying to get from them a thing that really has to live with inside oneself.
Exactly, exactly. And because what you describe is not in harmony with the natural laws of love, it doesn't work very well.
Uh-huh. Okay. This is good. What's another natural law of love?
Well, another one is, again, one that I just find to be so revolutionary in people's lives is the law of truth. Now, a lot of people believe that if they really tell the truth about who they are and what they're feeling and thinking, that they won't be loved, they won't be accepted. But the truth is that the more you self-disclose in a vulnerable way, the more you allow others to love you, and the more you're able to express the love of who you really are, not who you're pretending to be.
But many of us have pretty shameful, dark, scary secrets, you know, things that make us feel like we're not really lovable, and have experienced that when people find out those secrets, sometimes people run away.
It's true that not everyone is going to accept you unconditionally, but the amazing discovery that has been made by virtually everyone who's been willing to risk telling the truth is that the more truth you tell, the more love appears in your life. Maybe not from that person that you were infatuated with who was wrong for you, but the deeper unconditional love is because of another law, the law of attraction, is inevitably going to come your way the more you tell the truth in a vulnerable way. Some people, because they feel shame or guilt about certain aspects of themselves, may communicate their truth in a way that attracts blame and judgment because they're blaming and judging themselves.
So basically, they're projecting their own internal state on what's happening externally, and then because it is their internal state, that's what they see.
Exactly. And this comes up quite a bit with people that I coach in polyamorous relationships. A lot of people feel bad and wrong for loving more than one person. We've been conditioned to believe that this just is not okay. And so what happens very often is that people communicate their desire or their behavior in a way that does create judgment and blame because that's what they're expecting and that's what they're anticipating. For example, let's take a woman who does not want to make a monogamous commitment to her partner, and instead of speaking from a place of her needs and her desires and her fears, she comes on in a way that's very defiant, a way that's very, you might say, intellectual or rebellious. And all of these kinds of ways of communicating are very likely to create resistance and defensiveness in the listener.
So there's a way that what this person puts out is what they're going to get back.
Exactly.
This is all fascinating. I want to talk some more, but I also want to take a short pause for a break here. So you're listening to Love, Intimacy, and Sexuality. I'm talking to Dr. Deborah Annapol. We're talking about love. We're talking about polyamory. We're talking about perhaps a new paradigm, a new way of looking at love. And please come on back after these short messages.
Listen to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, a weekly internet audio program from PersonalLifeMedia.com. Learn ancient secrets that turn on the soul of sex at PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. I'm talking to Dr. Deborah Annapol. We've been talking about what she calls love without limits. We're talking about polyamory and all the many, many facets and natural laws around love. And before we took our break, you said something about infatuation, and it just sparked a little thought in my head. And I wonder, is there a natural law that covers infatuation? Is infatuation different than love? What is infatuation?
Well, I think this is one of the biggest confusions in our culture, is that for many people, what I would call infatuation is what they would call love.
Mm.
And, you know, the Eskimos have, whatever, hundreds of words for snow, and we need hundreds of words for love because it means so many different things to so many different people. Infatuation, I really wouldn't even put in the category of love. Not that there's anything wrong with it or bad about it, but it really has more to do with I would say a chemical high.
Mm.
And this is not really at all related to the deeper love or the more conscious or spiritual love that I discuss in the Seven Natural Laws of Love. Infatuation, and there's been a lot of research in the last decade that gets very specific about what brain chemicals are released at what point, and yeah, essentially, to keep it simple, we're talking about endorphins, the same kind of endorphins that are released by the brain when you take certain drugs, when you engage in sports, extreme sports. The chemical rush is very powerful, very pleasurable, and potentially very addictive, and it can be a lot of fun, but it's not love. Sometimes it leads to love, but very few people I find are really able to navigate that transition from the chemical-driven infatuation to the more heart-centered and spirit-centered, unconditional acceptance mm-hmm. and desire to give and to serve. A lot of our agenda, and I'll say are, because I think it really is extremely rare to find a person who's not driven to some extent by this agenda of receiving love and feeling good because of the excitement, the sexual charge, the egoic gratification, all of these things that we call love or sometimes infatuation, but they're very different from how I'm defining love, which is really more about what you can give and the willingness to recognize the other as essentially your own self, as who you are in a larger sense, that the spiritual truth that we're all one is actually, when that's expressed in at a human scale on a one-to-one level, that is love. The recognition that we're all one.
Mm-hmm. But it seems to me in my life that those moments are pretty rare. That's not a, you know, if I can find one person in this world where we really, you know, see into each other's souls and experience our love as both something exciting and something deeply spiritual, that seems like a rare thing, not a very common thing.
Well, historically, it's been extremely rare because people have made choices based more either on infatuation and sexual attraction or on practical considerations. Is he going to be a good breadwinner? Is she going to be a good mother? And I think it's part of our evolution as humans that as we do open up in more ways to more people, that what was once extremely rare becomes more accessible. Now, certainly there are some people with whom it's easier to find this kind of resonance and communion. And that's why we have special friends and partners. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I got it. So what, where I'm leading kind of is the, I'm kind of circling back on this polyamory thing, you know. What I'm wondering is, I think I see couples where what's going on is, the longer they are together, there's a new kind of challenge that comes up in relationship. There's a new kind of, it becomes more and more difficult to sustain sort of the passion and the fire and the fun. And I watch people, instead of rising to that challenge, start talking about, well, I'm going to open the relationship. And in a way, it's like, well, I'll just keep running from infatuation to infatuation because infatuation wears out in my real soul connection. Do you find that happening in your practice? Do you see people kind of struggling with this?
Constantly. And as I said before, of course the infatuation is going to wear off because it's chemical driven. And after about 2 years, the endorphin rush slows down. Maybe you can stretch it out a couple more years if you don't live together, don't spend too much time together, or engage in tantric practices to maintain this. But it's going to run down, and that doesn't mean that the charge and the passion is going to run down. But if the, as you say, if people are not willing to risk everything to stay in love, love will die. Now, it's an interesting dilemma, because if you look elsewhere for that charge, and many people do this and even make it work for them. One of the things that attracted me to polyamory many years ago was there seemed to be this possibility to have the security of a long-term partnership and to have the freedom to explore infatuations, new relationship energy, it's often called in the polyamory world. And it's true, you can create that. But if you're not at the same time really living by the natural laws of love and really continuing to expand the intimacy of your partnership, it's going to wither and die.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you try to control your attractions for other people and lie to yourself or to your partner that they don't exist, and somehow try to force all of your love and sexual energy to just focus on this one person, your partnership will also wither and die.
Right, right. Yes, it's exactly the thing. When I work with people, the thing that I say is, if we practice being open, sexually open, flirtatious, loving, warm, giving to everyone, if we're a little turned on all the time, then when we are with our beloved, we have a lot of practice being open and warm and flirtatious and being turned on. If we practice shutting it down and telling ourselves we shouldn't feel this and it's bad to feel this about other people, there's no switch inside us that we can just flip to then turn it on when we're with the beloved, that we can create boundaries, but that the path is to learn how to love everybody. And then when you're with those special beloveds, you're practicing loving everybody. That love is there. It's present all the time.
Beautifully said.
Thanks. we need to take a short break. We're going to give a chance for our sponsors to support us and for us to support the sponsors. When we come back, Dr. Annapol has an exercise that you can do at home, so please do join us after the break.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Life in an Orgasm-Based Community, a weekly online audio program where orgasmic innovators share the intricacies of their practice on personallifemedia.com.
Thank you.
We're back. Welcome back to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. I'm talking to Dr. Deborah Annapol. We've been having a really lovely conversation about love without limits, about the natural laws of love. When we took a break, we were kind of talking about just being love all the time. I want to talk for a moment just personally. I feel like after two divorces, the partner I have now, my partner in life, I really feel like I found my soulmate. And it's an sort of extraordinary experience that I don't really have a lot of words for. And I just kind of wonder if you could talk a little bit about love, you know, finding your soulmate, but loving others and how this all fits into the natural laws.
Well, I think that's the ideal probably for most people, is to find a soulmate and be with a soulmate and to fall madly in love with this soulmate. But the reality is that it's an extremely challenging form of relating, which not everybody is up for. A lot of people that I talk to, when they really are honest with themselves, what they're looking for is ease.
Mm-hmm.
And as Madonna once said, if you find somebody who think is your soulmate, you may want to run in the other direction. Because this is somebody who's going to push every button you've got and really challenge you to your limits. Now, for Madonna, this is what she wanted. This is what she chose. And not all of us have the courage and the drive and the stamina to jump into a relationship like that. We want it easy. And if it's a true soulmate, it's not going to be easy. It may be very fulfilling, but it's going to really demand that you step up to the plate.
Yeah. Well, I consider myself a tantric Buddhist, and I like to tell people by that I mean that I think that love and creating a soulmate and really hanging in there for the tough work is the fast path to enlightenment.
Yes.
Yeah. You are a great guest, and I could talk to you all day and all night, but we do have some time limits on this. So I'm just curious, if people wanted to learn more about you, wanted to get your book, wanted to find out more about your conferences and your workshops, how could they get in touch with you?
Well, my website is www.lovewithoutlimits.com. And that would be you can email me from that site, and you can find out, you can read a lot of my articles, you can buy my books, and you can find out what I'm currently up to. If you're interested in coaching over the phone or in person, you could also phone me at 415-507-1739.
Terrific. I also want you to know that you can. There'll be texts and transcripts of this show and all the Personal Life Media shows at the Personal Life Media Network, which is personallifemedia.com. That's all one word, personallifemedia.com. And included in the text and transcript for this show would be a link to Dr. Annapol's site, so you can just kind of get it through our site if you'd like. If you have comments or suggestions, or you want to get in touch with me, please know that you can also by sending email to chip@personallifemedia.com. Again, all one word, personallifemedia.com, chip@personallifemedia.com. Or if you want to leave a voicemail for me, we have a voicemail system, and if you call 206-350-5333, leave your name, my show name, Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and your question or comment, and please leave a phone number and or an email. And just know that when you leave a message on that system, it indicates your agreement for us to use your message on air if it seems appropriate to use it on air. Dr. Annapol, you have been a terrific guest, and I always like to ask my guests, can you recommend or suggest an exercise that people can do at home that can create a little more love, a little more intimacy, a little more sexuality in their lives?
I would love to offer that.
Cool.
And I have many, many exercises that I've used in my workshops over the years. If this one never fails to get people into a place of love, and not just love, but passion. And the wonderful thing about this exercise is that it doesn't require another person. You can do this all by yourself. and then take that passion into your own life or into a situation where you can share it. And when I have people do this in my groups, I use a piece of music that has been a favorite of mine for a long time, and it's a recording by Roberta Flack, The First Time I Saw Your Face.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful song.
But you could use any piece of music that puts you in the mood, instrumental or with lyrics. Just not one of those, I can't live without you, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so find a place where you can be relaxed, warm, and not interrupted. And get yourself in the mood with some beautiful music. And then recall a person in your life. It could be someone who's in your life now or someone from the past. It could be a lover, a parent, a friend, but someone who you have felt great love for. Someone who you have felt completely accepted by. Someone who has loved you to the depths. And really focus on that feeling that you've experienced of complete love and acceptance. And allow yourself to feel really, really immersed in a sea of love. And then from that place of feeling the heart connection and the love in your heart, call to mind someone who you have felt wildly attracted to. It could be someone you know personally. It could be a famous person that you greatly admire. But allow yourself to feel that real passion and attraction, that admiration, that worship. And when you're feeling that very strongly, turn that energy of love and passion and attraction onto yourself. And love yourself in this same way that you have reserved, perhaps, only for others. Allow yourself to feel real excitement and to feel that tingling and that vibration all over your body that perhaps you've only allowed yourself to feel in response to another. And if you find that you can't do this or you have resistance to it, this is a wonderful opportunity to take a look at what's in the way of really loving yourself passionately.
Sounds like a wonderful exercise. It just sounds like a lovely place to just touch, to remember that you are the source of love.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today.
My pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for listening in. That brings us to the end of another show, and goodbye for now.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.